For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
For the last few episodes, we've been talking about the Secret Service. We've already covered most of the disputed issues about the planning and protection of President Kennedy in Dallas on November 22, 1963. In this episode on the Secret Service, we'll try to wrap up the remaining issues surrounding the White House security detail in Dallas, including claims that the driver of the presidential limo, Bill Greer, killed President Kennedy, and claims that an agent in the follow-up car, George Hickey, killed President Kennedy. Then we'll summarize the information that we've discussed over the last few episodes.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
I don't know what this is all about.
Dallas police this morning resumed questioning the man they have formally charged with the assassination of President Kennedy.
I'm just a patsy.
The man is Lee Oswald.
Was Oswald acting alone, or was he a member of a conspiracy? Commission answers, he acted alone.
This is Solving JFK. I'm your host, Matt Crumpton.
We'll get to the allegations against Secret Service agents Greer and Hickey shortly. But first, I want to cover a list of assorted Secret Service facts that we have not yet addressed about November 22nd in Dallas, just to get them on the record. In the fall of 1963, there were two primary Secret Service agents who regularly drove the presidential limo: Bill Greer, who drove in Dallas, and Thomas Shipman. Shipman was not available for the Dallas trip because he died of a heart attack at Camp David on October 14, 1963, about 5 weeks before the assassination. Shipman was buried 2 days later without any toxicology reports. A presidential ambulance was supposed to be on standby in the event of an injury to President Kennedy. But just a few minutes before the president was shot, a man dressed in green fatigues named Jerry Belknap apparently had a seizure in Dealey Plaza. The presidential standby ambulance was used to take Belknap to the hospital. This meant that there was no ambulance available when the president needed it the most. After Secret Service Chief James Rowley saw the autopsy report, he sent two agents to Parkland Hospital to obtain a revision of the doctor's opinions about President Kennedy's wounds. One of these agents was Elmer Moore, who, according to James Gokenauer, admitted to intimidating Dr. Perry into changing his testimony. Agent Sam Kenny, the driver of the Secret Service follow-up car in Dallas, told researcher Vince Palomara, quote, "I believe there was a conspiracy. This thing was so well set up. Whoever did the shooting, he picked that area where he knew there wouldn't be any men by the car." Finally, Dallas Secret Service agent Robert A. Stewart, who believed that he was speaking anonymously at the time, told author Bill Sloan the following about the JFK assassination in 1993. Quote, "I can't talk about it. There are so many things I could tell you, but I just can't. I can't tell you anything. I'd like to, but I can't. It was a very heavy deal, and they would know. Someone would know. It's too dangerous, even now." As we all know by now, the JFK Records Act, which was signed in 1992, created the Assassination Records Review Board, which collected assassination-related records from government agencies to be disclosed according to the act. But when it comes to the Secret Service, the ARRB had some trouble getting the documents that it requested. The final report of the ARRB says, quote, Congress passed the JFK Act of 1992. 1 month later, the Secret Service began its compliance efforts. However, in January 1995, the Secret Service destroyed presidential protection survey reports for some of President Kennedy's trips in the fall of 1963. The review board learned of the destruction approximately 1 week after the Secret Service destroyed them, when the board was drafting its request for additional information. The board believed that the Secret Service files on the president's travel in the weeks preceding his murder would be relevant. You heard that right. The Secret Service destroyed documents covering presidential motorcades in the fall of 1963 after they knew that they had to comply with the JFK Records Act. So what did the Secret Service have to say for themselves? In a July 31, 1995 letter to ARRB Chair John Thunheim, the Secret Service defended itself by explaining that it merely destroyed two boxes of documents on accident. The Secret Service provided a detailed technical explanation of what happened, but their defense pretty much boils down to administrative error or accident. But 1995 wasn't the only time the Secret Service destroyed JFK assassination-related files. The House Select Committee on Assassinations found that the agency had destroyed the original 1963 Protective Research Section files. Instead of turning over the original documents to the HSCA, the Secret Service created a computerized summary of what the original documents said. One has to ask why the original documents were destroyed after they were summarized. Sure, the fact of the summary may capture most of the information, but it's not the same as the original document. If there's nothing to hide, the originals should not have been destroyed. On top of the destruction of the original PRS files, Agent James Mastrovito told ARRB investigator Joan Zimmerman that he had received a piece of President Kennedy's brain in a vial, but he destroyed it in a machine that destroys food. After Mastrovito left the Secret Service in 1979, he went on to a 25-year career as a contractor with the CIA. One of the most common questions that I hear about the JFK assassination is whether or not the Secret Service was involved. But these people aren't asking about whether there was nefarious planning or stripping of security. Instead, the most well-known allegations against the Secret Service are two separate theories that Secret Service agents Bill Greer and George Hickey actually fired shots at President Kennedy that day. Given the proliferation of these theories, especially on social media, we can't cover the Secret Service's role in the JFK assassination without addressing them. In 1991, author and radio broadcaster Bill Cooper wrote a book called Behold a Pale Horse. In that book, Cooper argued that President Kennedy was shot in the head by his own driver, Bill Greer. This theory has gained momentum in recent years due to the Netflix documentary series, American Conspiracy: The Octopus Murders. In episode 3 of that series, a woman named Sherry Seymour claims to have seen a special version of the Zapruder film that is different from the one publicly available online. Here's how she describes it.
He stands up and he starts playing this tape. It was the Zapruder tape of the Kennedy assassination, but then he slowed it way down. Then you saw the driver take a gun and go like this and shoot Kennedy. And the bullet comes out of the gun this slow, very, very, very slow. And it hits Kennedy in the head. And you see everything flying out of his head. And I'm thinking, this isn't the tape I ever saw before.
I was familiar with the driver did it theory before the Octopus Murders series. But as I prepared to cover this topic, I went back and looked at the Zapruder film again, this time with a specific focus on Bill Greer, to see if there was anything to this theory. Looking at the public version of the film, not some special Zapruder film, I'll be honest, it does appear that the driver, Bill Greer, turned once to look back at the president, and then turned again, this time with some sort of a gun in his left hand. And the presence of what looks like a gun is on the film just moments before the infamous frame 313 of the Zapruder film, where Kennedy's head is violently hit. When you really study the film, it becomes clear that this object that definitely does look like a gun at first glance is actually the top of Agent Roy Kellerman's head. It's easy to tell that this is the case because you can see the same reflection on Kellerman's head earlier in the Zapruder film. The reason it looks like a gun is because the glare of the sun on the top of Kellerman's head hits at the same time that Greer is looking back. Also, there's no visible blast from a gun coming from Greer. Putting the Zapruder film evidence aside for a moment, the other known evidence in the case does not support the possibility that Greer fired a weapon. First, no one is on the record saying that Greer fired a shot. We would have to believe that everyone who was in the presidential limo is in on the cover-up. That would be Agent Kellerman, Governor Connally, Nellie Connally, the First Lady, and Agent Clint Hill, who had just climbed in from the back of the vehicle. We would also have to believe that no one else in the crowd saw Greer fire this shot, but it was somehow captured on film. So, other than a mistaken interpretation of the Zapruder film, which is easy to do, to be fair, there is no evidence that demonstrates that Bill Greer fired a shot at President Kennedy. Greer certainly does have blame for the outcome of November 22nd. If he would have hit the gas immediately when Agent Kellerman ordered him to get out of the motorcade line and go to the hospital, the injuries to the president's head may have been avoided. Instead, Greer slowed down, almost to a complete stop, and then looked back an extra time. We have no proof that this was done on purpose to harm the president, but it was certainly gross negligence. That extra time between Greer's first and second look to the back seat proved to be fatal for President Kennedy. So, while Greer is not without blame, the idea that he fired a shot at the president while driving the limo is proven to be not true in the view of this podcast.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
What about the other Secret Service agent who allegedly fired a shot at President Kennedy? George Hickey. The claim that Hickey fired the headshot that killed the president is part of a theory that has been put forth by ballistics expert Howard Donahue. Donahue was one of the volunteer marksmen that CBS used when it reenacted the shots that Oswald supposedly took from the sixth-floor window. Donahue's work on that project caused him to doubt that three shots were fired by Oswald. So around 1968, Donahue dove into the details of the case. He learned that a panel of doctors assembled by then-Attorney General Ramsey Clark had revised the location of the entrance wound on President Kennedy's head. The Clark panel doctors concluded that the rear entrance wound was actually 4.5 inches higher than where the autopsy doctors and the Warren Commission said it was. In other words, the Clark panel found, without ever seeing President Kennedy's body, that all of the autopsy doctors were mistaken about the entrance location of the head wound. Relying on the new Clark panel wound location, Donahue drew a line from the president's head to the trajectory of where he thought the bullet came from. That line went straight back to Secret Service agent George Hickey in the follow-up car. And sure enough, Hickey was witnessed by several people holding an AR-15 in his hands right after the president was shot. In addition, there are 10 witnesses who reported smelling gunpowder near the street level, which proponents of this theory point to as support. In 1992, Bonar Menninger wrote a book called Mortal Error, The Shot That Killed JFK. In this book, Menninger advanced the argument that was put forth by Howard Donahue, that George Hickey fired the fatal headshot. More recently, in 2013, Australian investigator Colin McLaren was featured in a documentary called JFK, The Smoking Gun, which argues the George Hickey theory. But there are some serious problems with this theory. First, the entire argument is based on the wound location that was created out of thin air by the Clark panel, which was comprised of doctors who were not present at the autopsy, but made their revision based on the autopsy materials. If you listen to season one of this podcast, you know that there are real questions about the credibility of the autopsy itself. Second, it's true that witnesses saw George Hickey holding an AR-15. There's even a photo of him with it, but there is not a single witness who said that they saw George Hickey fire a shot. We would expect that at least a few witnesses would have seen Hickey fire the shot. Third, the fact that multiple witnesses smelled gunpowder near the street level is also consistent with there being a shot from another location that was closer to the street, like, perhaps, near the grassy knoll. But the ultimate reason why I find that the George Hickey theory is not valid is that the theory holds that Oswald acted alone, just like the Warren Report said, but that the headshot was not fired by Oswald from the sixth-floor window. Instead, it came from George Hickey, a Secret Service agent who fired the shot on accident. To believe this claim, you would have to believe that 1. Oswald acted alone in firing the other two shots, and that 2. The government would go to extreme lengths to cover up an accident by a Secret Service agent. We've been able to rule out 2 of the most popular theories when it comes to the Secret Service and the JFK assassination. But what about the idea that the Secret Service's acts and omissions were more than just negligence? Is there any evidentiary support for that? Warren Report critics like Secret Service expert Vince Palomara believe that there likely were some nefarious actors within the agency because there were so many aspects of the president's security that were handled differently in Dallas as compared to everywhere else. Here's a quick recap of the Secret Service issues that we've covered so far. First, 9 agents from the White House security detail had a late-night drinking episode and stayed out until 3 a.m. when they had to report for duty 5 hours later. This may be why some of the Secret Service agents were so slow to react, according to witnesses. I would label the drinking incident as gross negligence. Second, the bubble top was specifically requested for Dallas because of the Adlai Stevenson incident. Nevertheless, even though the bubble top was initially on the limo at Love Field, it was removed. The failure to use the bubble top is by no means a smoking gun because the bubble top was not used all the time. Still, the reason why it was requested specifically for Dallas, then put on the limo, and removed at the last minute has never been clearly explained. I find the removal of the bubble top to be inconclusive, but suspicious. Third, the sheriff was ordered to stand down for motorcade security, and the Dallas police were told to stop their security detail just short of Dealey Plaza. The police had also initially planned to ride in a car near the president's limo with machine guns just in case. According to the Dallas police, their involvement was changed by Agent Lawson the night before the motorcade. However, Agent Lawson told the HSCA that he did not recall who removed the police cars from the motorcade. This reduction of security alone does not prove anything. But for me, it makes Agent Lawson a person of interest since he doesn't remember. Fourth, the number of motorcycles and the position of them within the motorcade was changed from the original plan. Based on all of the other motorcades in 1963, there were supposed to be motorcycles riding at the four corners of the vehicle. If not, there would be at least one motorcycle on each side of the vehicle, with additional ones in front of and behind it. In Dallas, there were other motorcycles in the motorcade, but the only ones near President Kennedy were the four officers in a V formation directly behind the limo. Yet, in all of the other 3 cities on the Texas trip, there were motorcycles alongside the president's limo. According to the number 2 man in charge of the White House security detail, Floyd Boring, the motorcycle officers were instructed to stay back so that the president could speak to guests in his limo without motorcycle noise. We know that it was Agent Lawson who gave Captain Perdue Lawrence the directive to make sure that the motorcycle officers did not ride alongside the vehicle. Then, in Agent Lawson's letter to Secret Service Chief James Rowley, just 8 days after the assassination, Lawson says that there were motorcycle agents on the right and left flanks of the limo, which was not true. Agent Lawson should have known that there were no motorcycle officers alongside the limo because, according to Dallas police, he was the one who made sure that it didn't happen. I find Agent Lawson's behavior to once again be suspicious and unexplained. Fifth, the luncheon location was changed from one that was easy to secure, the Women's Building, to the Trade Mart, which was more difficult to secure. It appears that pressure from Governor Connally is what ultimately led to the Trade Mart being the luncheon venue. It's true that the best parade route from Love Field to the Trade Mart through downtown would go through Dealey Plaza, but the 120-degree turn from Houston to Elm was not in the original plans. The limo was going to go straight through Dealey Plaza down Main Street until that plan was changed the night before. While it's true that the motorcade route that was published in the paper did have the turn onto Elm, motorcycle police were not aware of that. Once again, it was Agent Lawson who made this decision to make the turn onto Elm. I understand the argument that Agent Lawson didn't want to drive over the concrete barrier as the police had planned, but what doesn't make sense to me is that Lawson apparently changed the plan to include the Elm Street turn the night before. He never explained why he changed his mind. Sixth, the order of the motorcade was changed around for no clear reason. The president's personal military aide and his doctor were made to sit far away from him. The White House photographer was moved, and the flatbed truck that carried photographers and rode in front of the president was canceled at the last minute. Agent Winston Lawson seems to once again be the point person for the changes to the motorcade protocol. However, Lawson told the HSCA that Democratic National Committee advance man Jack Puterbaugh was responsible, which Puterbaugh denied. Seventh, the rooftops were not guarded in Dallas the way that they were in other cities. Secret Service agents and police are supposed to be assigned to the top of any multi-story building along the parade route. Agent Lawson admitted to the Warren Commission and the HSCA that he could not remember giving police instructions to watch building windows, even though he usually would do that. Police officers confirmed that they were never given any instructions regarding rooftops or building windows from Agent Lawson. Once again, Agent Lawson seems to be at the center of the security failure. Eighth, the two ride-along agents on the rear of the limo, Henry Ribka and Donald Lawton, were called off by Agent Emery Roberts as the motorcade was leaving Love Field. The official reason for the agents being called off is that President Kennedy did not want them on the rear of the car because he wanted the public to be able to see him. But when we zoom into the details, it turns out that the only person who claims to have actually heard the president say that he wanted the rear agents gone was Agent Floyd Boring, who said that he heard it in Tampa. But there are at least 30 people on the record who say that President Kennedy gave no such order, or if he did, they were not aware of it. Secret Service agents only rode on the back of the limo between 50 and 75% of the time. So the mere fact of the agents not being on the limo is not a smoking gun. Still, the rationale for the agents being called off, which does not hold up today, and the way they were called off at the last possible moment, makes this episode extremely suspicious. Agent Emery Roberts was responsible for calling Ribka and Lawson off of the vehicle at Love Field. Agent Roberts also told the agents in the follow-up car to not take any action when the shots were fired in Dealey Plaza. Ninth, the Protective Research Section of the Secret Service failed to identify reports of any threats in Dallas when they were asked about them by Agent Lawson. The PRS didn't even mention the Adlai Stevenson incident or the threat raised by Joseph Miltier about shooting the president from the window of a building with a high-powered rifle. This intelligence failure is bad. I reserve the possibility that they just had a bad system and they couldn't keep up with threats. Still, something should have come up as a threat for Dallas. The fact that there was nothing at all is surprising. In conclusion, I find the actions of Agent Winston Lawson to be very suspicious. Agents Emery Roberts, Floyd Boring, and possibly Bill Greer also deserve further scrutiny. I can't say with certainty that any of those men were involved in a conspiracy to kill the president. However, the likelihood that all of these lapses in security happened uniquely in Dallas, and many of them still don't have a good reason, is enough to exceed my coincidence threshold. So did the Secret Service as an institution kill President Kennedy? No. Did a few specific agents take intentional actions to reduce the president's security and put him in a position to be shot? Maybe. It's possible, but by no means conclusive, and we'll probably never know for sure. Next time on Solving JFK, we wrap up the Secret Service series by looking at a possible plot against President Kennedy in Chicago that was brought to light by Agent Abraham Bolden. If you heard anything that you believe is out of context, or if you have additional information to offer, you can let us know at solvingjfkpodcast@gmail.com. Please provide citations to the record for any fact that you're relying on. For transcripts, sources, and official podcast merchandise, visit solvingjfkpodcast.com.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Thanks for listening. Visit solvingjfkpodcast.com for more information.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.